Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Enemy by Kay Eason, narrated by Faye Dow. Part 1. Chapter 1. Smoke collected on the belly of the storm. It rose up in slim fingers above the tree line, coiled into a fist when it cleared the ridge, hung there, and spread against the underbelly of the clouds, like oil across water. If a man stood just so, facing into the wind, he might imagine that it was the forest burning, except this was the wrong season for natural fires. Too cold, too wet, snow underfoot, and more waiting overhead. It was the wrong smell, too, for burning trees. The wind brought a fire pit stink, flesh and charcoal and dung. Village smells, which most days meant sure shelter, with a storm on the way. Then that man would peer skyward, and consider the clouds, and give thanks to his ancestors that the village was so near, and that he had a sackful of tradables to buy his welcome. Snow hare skins soft and white, a fine rack of antlers he'd taken off a bull elk that had broken through the snow crust upslope a day ago, weak and furious, and an easy mark for arrows. Good fortune, Vico had thought then. Meat and hide, horn and hooves, worth the extra days spent above the trees while the storm gathered. Worth the wait on the hike down. A stranger did not walk into an Alvir village unchallenged from the forest, looking like Vico did. A stranger came by the road, with goods and hands on clear display, his axe on his hip and bow slung on his back. Except on that road now, there was a column of soldiers jogging toward the crease in the hills, and the smoke, and the village. Their collected breath streamed out behind them like steam off a boiling pot. The standard-bearer's flag clung sullenly to its pole, wrapped tight against the gusts. Ilari Legion, armed and armoured, and moving fast. Now Vico wondered if he'd caught the elk's unluck, failed to appease its spirit, because that was not village smoke collecting there above the trees, nor was that the smell of village cook fires. Charred meat, charred wood, the smell of raiding. Had Vico not found that elk, he might have been in the village when the raiders came, and it might be his meat stinking on the wind. He shivered. Perhaps it was not unluck the elk had given him. Perhaps its spirit had repaid him in kind, saved him from a trap and slow death, in return for relief from the same. Beside him, Helgi heaved a deep-chested whine. Protest. Query. Distress, maybe, at the smoke reek and the movement on the road. Vico dropped a quick hand to the dog's head, glanced sidelong and found Logi halfway out of his crouch, ears up and curious. Logi knew roads meant villages, people, new things, and warm sleeping. But not that village. Not now. Even if he might find walls still standing or some shelter, the Legion wouldn't welcome him. Tall, pale foreigner, with village houses burned and people dead? No, they would. What was the Dvergiri word for it? Detain him. And likely shoot his dogs. Maybe throw him in chains after, and sell him in the city. He'd heard his elders' tales about Ilari justice. Best he get as far from the road as he could, as soon as he could. There were other villages. Let the raiders come for him, if they felt brave. Let them try to find him, at all. He took a handful of Logi's scruff. No, he winced. Days since he'd used his voice. Wait! Logi sighed and dropped his chin onto his paws. Helgi chuffed and settled back to his belly. And the three of them waited, part of the snowscape, until the last trooper bobbed out of sight. Snowdon Eilig had just rolled the last of her yenya, lit it and blown the first smoke that didn't stink like destruction, when Brielle's sending came. A cascade of jumbled impressions crowded into her skull, a Svartjager's vantage above the tree line and moving fast, dizzy twist of tree and ground, a flash of two legs, colour, the hollow gut swerve, and there, a clutch, trio of troopers marching ragged up the path above Davni. One trailed, wounded, prey. Behind the others, who pecked, kept heads together. Two male, one female. And because Brielle remembered her training, an eye blink's focus on the weapons. Plain legion blades, still sheathed. Short javelins in a sling on the larger man's back, crossbow on the woman's, the night and blood diamond pattern on the tunics. They were from Cardick's garrison. That was no surprise. But to arrive at this toad-shit village already, this fast, laughing God, that was. The sending ended, and the blindness came. Price of a Svartjager's sending year. Count it out in heartbeats. No need for panic. Listen to the sizzle where her yenya had landed. Smell the sweet and spice. She thought about trying to find it, pat-pat in the snow, salvage something of it. Swore instead and crouched, her hands flat to the wall of the ruined temple. Cold stone, slick moss, a dead Alvir god's face roughing her palms. She waited for the sunrise stages of vision, black to grey to, well, more grey, in the shadowless pre-blizzard twilight. This wasn't so different than the cave dark of below, without witchfire. Overhead, a whisper of wings and tail, a thump as Brielle found a perch in what remained of the temple's rafters, soot sifted down from the impact, fresh, stinging insult to offended eyes. Snow blinked tears and blur as her vision crept back. Fuck, Brielle. Kill me someday, won't you? If you send when I need to see. Brielle hissed. One of her three primary utterances. Big talker, Brielle. Snow squinted up, scanned the rafters. Stone building, this one. The corpse of a temple gutted during the purge. The walls still stood. Moss grown on the north sides. The tough mountain spine vines on the rest. Most of the roof had spilled down between them. The thatch had gone first, collapsed and left a ribcage of crossbeams. Brielle's hide matched the wood's greasy black, invisible until she dipped her long neck and stared down at snow. In the twilight, the Svartjager's eyes glowed like embers, like the village had when the last of the fires sputtered to ash. She and Rassan had picked through the wreckage, expecting the odd bit of surviving silver and coin. Instead, they'd found all the wealth you'd expect in an Alvir village on a caravan route, wealth no raiders would have left behind. So this had not been a raid, then. Something else. Big damn fire, yeah? Fires and corpses and ashes. And now there was a motherless patrol coming upslope, and she didn't want to be here when they arrived. Grey skies, no shadows to weave and wear, no light to push and bend. The storm might conceal a retreat, an escape, except it had stalled out to flakes and cold spit while soldiers clustered in the village and sent scouts to search buildings and... Brielle!
Shut up!
Another of Brielle's utterances, the one that covered everything S wouldn't. This version meant... Now what? Go, Snow told her, waved a hand at the sky through the crossbeams. Find us a safe place, yeah? Scout and come back. No sending. I need my eyes.
Chirrup.
The Svartjager took a running scrabble along the beam, launched a handspan from the end, arrowed into wind. Her wings caught currents and angled, and then... She was up, gliding black against the brooding steel sky. She circled the temple once, then flapped and dipped and vanished behind trees. Snowden Aelic doubled back through the ruined temple, squeezed through the gap in the wall beside the shattered archway, and dashed into the courtyard. Old stone paths fought for territory with weeds, made for treacherous footing under the snow. She light-stepped a path across it, scuff and scrape. Rassan hadn't been so elegant, had gouged out a trail for any fool to follow. Careless stupid, no surprise. Rassan was green, not even 20. Needed seasoning. Sabrak's special orders to her.
Teach him something, Snow, will you?
When he'd sent them out. Because Rassan, the idiot, had cut the wrong purse in Cardic and the wrong throat to go with it. Governors, consort, yeah, real smart. So it was a run into the wild to meet Sabrak's new courier in the hills above Daphne village.
Take the long way, Sabrak said. Waste time.
In winter, funny man, Sabrak, sending her out here with a sullen, half-taught teenaged godsworn initiate and the unappealing promise of one of Daphne's two taverns as reward. Only Daphne wasn't anymore, and the troops from Cardic had gotten here before coals were cool. Two unexpected events in as many days. Blame Teleri raiders for the first. Blame a dog-loyal Cardic commander for the second. A man from the sixth with something to prove. A woman would have waited for the storm to pass, reckoning the raid long over and the village past any help. The detachment here now must have been running patrol, saw the smoke, diverted and fucking sprinted to get here this fast. Snow managed her own dash, more effort than she remembered, running. The sea axe banged bruises into her hip, had to strap it down better, adjust the motherless belt. It wasn't rigged for running, neither was she. Her lungs seized on the cold air, coughed a cloud of protest. Bad habit, Yenya. The tent sulked at the uphill edge of the temple grounds, between a cluster of young evergreens and a tumbled wall of field stones. Ragged stones ringed a centre of burned wood and stripped bones. Last night's unlucky rabbit. Thank you, Brielle. A scene not unlike the village, down to the iron pan still resting in ashes. Drasan's turn to clean up, which she'd expected to do anyway, which no one would do now. She paused long enough to grab the pan's handle, used it to push the tent flap aside. Rassan didn't even turn to look. He was busy sorting loot from the village, coins and chits divided into piles, and most of his own belongings scattered around him.
Did you enjoy your poison weed?
She considered the back of his skull, imagined a cast iron impact. It's not poison. And no. She sucked another lungful of air, blinked away spots.
We have to go. Now.
The fuck?
Rassan looked at her now, frowned.
The courier's not here yet. Sabrak said wait.
As if she hadn't been in the room, getting the same orders.
Wait for the courier in the old temple in Daphne, yeah? She'll find you.
No idea what the message would be, or if there was merchandise to go with it, or what the courier looked like. Probably nothing more than a package of uncut Rasi, delivered by a scruffy Alvir bandit. Running Rasi was dangerous work. The last courier had gotten herself caught by the Cardic garrison right before solstice, trying to sneak into the gates after dark. Sabrak had been hunting a new courier since. He wouldn't be happy if she missed the meeting. Rasi was habit-forming. Lots of people in Cardic who wanted a fix, yeah. And if Sabrak couldn't deliver, some other cartel might. But she could come back once the Legion was gone. No courier would come here with the Legion camped out and swarming.
Bigger problems.
Brielle saw troopers.
Attitude settled into Drasan's jaw.
Not likely. It's too soon for troopers. Your vermin is mistaken.
Vermin, right. Brielle wasn't the problem. Fucking stubborn male pride was, godsworn arrogance that didn't like direction from a woman, any woman, even a half-blood ally, half again his age. Made her wonder sometimes if the foremothers hadn't been right after all,
and the reforms a soft-minded mistake. She loosed a wrap of her patience.
I saw them, idiot. They're on the toad-fucking trail to the temple, and you left a lot of marks. Now be quiet and move.
Shit. Rassan forgot any pretense at authority. Listening to her now, moving fast, random grabs at clothing, supplies that would probably miss something vital. Busy scooping coins into pouches too, clink and rattle. She hissed a fair imitation of Brielle. Leave that toad shit! And scooped her pack off its perch on the tent pole. Quick reconnaissance of the contents, a quicker scan of the surroundings. She jammed the iron pan in, more weight than she wanted, but more use than Drasan's priorities. It might stop an arrow loosed at her back. She settled the pack across her shoulder, circled the tent once and twice on her way back for a third pass and a peek out the flap. And knew. Premonition. Certainty. Too many years dodging armed and armoured authority. Clink. Rattle. Hiss. Armour had its own resonance. The legionnaire's sword, its own whispers, and the troopers themselves, oh laughing God, their own breed of arrogance that came with both armour and sword. It was the woman's voice outside, command solid and only a little breathless.
You, in the tent, out now, and slowly.
As if Snow had any intention. She crossed stairs with Drasan, traded tiny slit smiles. The boy was a fool about some things, but he knew close-quarter fighting, and better than that, he knew when to run. Like now. Someone had been smoking yenya by the fallen wall. Kenyak smelled it before he saw the pale spiral rising out of a pile of dead leaves and twigs. He stopped beside it, under pretense of investigation, and caught his breath instead. Long, cold chestfuls of sweet smoke that didn't cut the memory of what he'd passed through. The village stench lingered in his throat, on his tongue, cooked meat that had been people in the streets and the houses and the shops. Fast death, Ulu had muttered, and made a sign against ill luck that would have earned lashes if First Spear Rurik had seen it. The villagers hadn't tried to run, hadn't had time, and that wasn't like raiders, which made Kenyak shiver for reasons that had nothing to do with iced mud in his boot, or the blisters, or the yenya, which meant there was someone up here. Sudden death wasn't Teleri raiders, and sudden death might not answer to swords or spears. Might come back, and they'd never know it, and die like the villagers had. The Rurik that lived in his head looked down his long nose and sneered, coward, and worse, superstitious. The faces of abandoned gods peered out of the old temple's brickwork, crude carvings, Alviri work. Kenyak felt a small surge of pride that the Dever Giri had never produced something so ugly. Since the Purge, the Alari Republic relied on the wits of its people, not on superstition. He felt a twinge of something colder, too. There were snubbed candles pressed against the brickwork and a smear of ash. Someone still prayed here, or had, until the raiders came. But whoever had lit the yenya, whoever hid in a temple to dead Alviri gods, that person couldn't be responsible for what had happened in Davni.
Kenyak, you toad fucker!
Orlu came around the wall, hand on his sword and scowling.
Why are you holding back? There's tracks! Fresh! Motherless toad shites are here! But don't need to hear it! Salis went up, wouldn't wait, said I should get you!
This while trading his sword hilt for a fistful of Kenyak's tunic through the gap in the armour. Rough haul, half around and half over the remains of the stone.
Yenya. Who cares what they smoke? They're here, rabbit brain, and we're going to get them.
Orlu let go and brought both hands down hard on Kenyak's shoulders, like he meant to drive him into the earth. Listen! First time! Scared's normal, yeah?
The knot in Kenyak's belly didn't feel at all like fear.
Olu, these can't be the ones who burned Daphne. There's not enough of them. Maybe they're conjurers. And maybe we've got wings. No way there's a conjurer out here. It's too wild.
Different light in Olu's eyes now. Different shape to the smile. Kenyak thought of the barracks cat when it cornered something helpless.
We marched all the way out here and up here, yeah? Got to have something for it, or Oracle Skinnus. Come on!
Kenyak clipped off his protest. Nerves, that was all. Olu was right. At least Olu didn't insist that they run the rest of the way. Kenyak followed the older man through the temple's ruined guts, dodged fallen timber and scuffed through the ash. There were indeed tracks stitched through the snow by someone who didn't care who saw them. Kenyak was more and more certain the person who'd made those tracks hadn't a thing to do with the burning. Equally certain Olu wouldn't listen. Kenyak's opinion didn't change when he saw the tent either. Faded thing. Ragged. Couldn't hold more than two people. Not a raiding party. Salis had her crossbow cocked and levelled at the flap. Saw them coming and jerked her chin, as if there was any uncertainty of her destination or intent. Olu threw a hard look at him. Kenyak pushed his chin up and nodded and squeezed out his own scowl. Never mind the hammering in his chest or the sudden premonition of bloodshed. He angled into his place on the tri-point formation, drew his sword. Anyone trying to run would have to get past him or Olu or Salis. He hoped they'd try it. Hoped they wouldn't. His hand shook enough that the sword wobbled, and he steadied his blade with the other hand, caught another look from Olu, and a wink. He could just make out voices from inside, male and female.
You, in the tent! Out now and slowly!
They got quiet before Salis finished. No response. Maybe they don't speak Dvergiri. Except everyone did, even raiders. The Ilari Republic made that its price for doing business. One beat, two, 20, while breath steamed and snow turned from sprinkles to steady flakes. Salis peeled a smile, took a step forward toward the tent flap.
I said, come out! Savvy that? I'll shoot if you don't!
Kenyak pulled a deep breath, closed his eyes for the exhale, willed his stomach to settle. And in that moment's darkness, he heard the long, ragged sound of tearing canvas and the thud twang of a firing crossbow and another ripping sound. A wet thud that sounded like steel in flesh and a man's choked off gargling scream. She caught one. He opened his eyes in time to see Salis lurch sideways, see the hole in the tent where her bolt had torn through, a second hole, wider below it, where something had torn its way out. Salis dropped to one knee, her crossbow spilled out of her hands and into the fire pit. So very few gaps in legionnaire armour, but her knife's hilt poked, triumphant, from just above her hip. Someone inside throwing metal at them, someone with good aim. Kenyak broke formation. Instinct swung him, sideways, out of range, just the right angle to see the dull black flicker of Ilari steel come through the back of the tent and slice down. A long, legged shape stepped through. Dvergir black skin, Alvir fair hair, an eye blink of nervous indigo turned on him. Half-blood. And then she was over the stones and into the trees. He took a step after her, hesitated, snow falling heavier by the heartbeat. They'd lose all trace if he didn't go now. But Salis was hurt, and you didn't leave your partners, and Olu
Kenyak
was right on his shoulder, flat-voiced fury.
The fuck is your problem? Get one dead inside, and Salis, she's...
He stabbed at the forest, running.
he processed Ulu's report.
A second one! Running away!
Shit! Ulu scowled.
Glanced back at Salis on her knees, fingers wrapped around the dagger hilt. Blood turned the snow red underneath her.
Can't leave her!
Salis swore. Spat.
I'll be fine!
Light a fire, said Kenyak. Rorik will see it. He'll send someone up.
Ulu's turned to hesitate. He looked from Forrest to Salis and back.
I don't think we can leave.
Listen to the green, Ulu. Get that motherless toadfucker.
All of Salis's breath at once. Ragged inhale on the back end and a rough,
order, Savvy.
Savvy,
said Ulu, and clapped Kenyak hard on the shoulder. And then they were running again, through trees this time, and Kenyak didn't notice the cold at all. Chapter 2. It was the dogs who warned him. First Helgi, then Logi, went stiff and still and sniffed. Then Helgi growled, barely a mutter, and ghosted ahead with Logi silent and tight on his flank. No barking, which meant Vyko did not drop his armful of dry wood and string his bow or unsling his axe. A man could freeze to death without a fire, that was certain. Whatever the dogs had upset, far less so. An animal, maybe a fox or a lynx. There was no reason to rush unless the dogs made noise, which they didn't. Vyko trailed their paw prints and their silence to the clearing, where he found Logi stalking, stiff-legged, around the spruce's wide skirt. Helgi, always braver, had thrust his head into the dark gash where the branches split, his tail poked up straight and furious. Vyko considered something in there, yes, but there were no tracks besides his and the dogs in the snow. Nor, he crouched and balanced the wood against his flat thigh, nor had whatever it was bothered his gear. He could see it, hanging where he'd left it, with none of the contents spilled out. A less cautious man would have ducked under the branches and looked first. Whatever ran from dogs was not that dangerous. But there was a village smoking in the next valley, Ilari soldiers on the march, and only a fool rushed into things he did not understand. Men died from bad judgment. He brushed a patch of the snow, stacked the wood carefully one piece after another. There was no sound from inside the tree, no sound from Helgi, only Logi's breathless whining. A lynx, perhaps. A squirrel. Vyko clicked his tongue once and twice. Helgi returned without protest. Logi kept circling until Vyko said his name. Then he whined and crept back, ears flat, darting glances over his shoulder. Vyko frowned. Grant that the younger dog wasn't Helgi's quality, but he wasn't a pup either. Something up that tree that was not squirrel or cat. He straightened, stepped around the wood and strung his bow, notched an arrow. The dogs were watching him now, hunter tense. Go, he bade them, having neither hand free for signals. Helgi mirrored Vyko's caution, ears forward, rough and tail stiff. Careful stalking back to the tree. Logi abandoned all sense, bolted under the branches and hurled himself against the trunk, and, merciful ancestors, woofed up at the branches. The branches hissed back at him. Vyko had startled snakes before, sunning themselves on rocks, had teased cats as well. This hiss belonged to neither snake nor cat. A deeper sound, more resonant. A bigger animal, then. And angry. Helgi growled, sat beside Logi and stared pointedly up. Vyko ducked under the branches, gave his eyes a moment to adjust to green-blue shadow, and looked. He might have been wrong about the snake, maybe 2 man-heights up, where the branches were too slender for weight greater than squirrels, an arrowhead skull swiveled on a long black neck, big eyes,
ember bright in the storm light, twin slit pupils. It hissed again, and Vika...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?